a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
State affairs will now come to order. Rep. Jim Gibson, thanks for joining us this morning. I appreciate it. You get the first tardy slip of the session. Followed quickly by Representative Virtue.
Thank you. Thank you.
You didn't hold that honor long. All right. Thank you all for coming. I don't see... We do have a...
One page.
And I'm told that for this first session of pages, we're only going to have one page. So if you could introduce yourself to us, please.
My name is Riley Larson. I'm from Watertown.
Welcome, Riley. Just for the sake of formality, we have veteran legislators here, veteran lobbyists. Turned off all cell phones and other electronic devices. We will, as is a custom, run the conversation and discussion with the proponents, opponents through the chair. And I believe, given the experience of this group, that's probably all the orientation we need. That's the coffees in the back, Representative Hunhoff. Bathrooms are through those doors to your left.
I don't see the coffee.
There's no coffee today. They haven't got any up here.
There's no coffee today. If you had gotten here earlier, you would have had some. But. All right, so looking forward to a good couple years as the State Affairs Group. I'm excited to get lots of good things done for the state, and I appreciate your cooperation in that regard. So with that, let's go right into our first agenda of the 2013 session right after I call the roll. At this point, I would ask the Secretary to call the roll. Those present will say here. Those not present will not say anything.
Representative Consett. Gibson.
Here.
Gosch.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Hunhoff.
Here.
Killer. Munsterman.
Here.
Nofstrup.
Here.
Parsley.
Here.
Virtue.
Here.
Wink.
Here.
Cronin.
Here.
Lust.
Here.
Mr. Chair, there's a quorum.
And you've got Consett and excused, right?
Yes.
Killer.
Okay, very good. Thank you. We have a quorum. Also, remind those testifying, sign up in the podium on the back. Those who are lobbyists, please have your badges visible as you approach the stand to testify. So, now, with that, let's get right into our agenda today. We will take House Bill 1012, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the students eligible for resident tuition benefits at universities controlled by the Board of Regents. Take proponent testimony on House Bill 1012. Proponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Monty Kramer with the South Dakota Board of Regents office. In the spirit of getting some good things done with the committee this morning, I bring before you House Bill 1012. This bill does three things. First of all, it provides that anyone who graduates from a South Dakota high school that would be eligible for resident tuition no matter when they come back to the state. Currently, the law says that you no longer qualify after 7 years. The 7 years that's in the law, as far as we know, was an arbitrary date, an arbitrary number of years. We're not sure where it came from exactly, but that's been in the statute for some time. The second thing that the bill does is it changes the residency of an unemancipated student, somebody who's no longer financially dependent upon their parents, from the age of 21 to the age of 24. So in other words, today if you were 21 years of age, and you were a resident in Iowa, and you were attending school full time, and you moved to and your parents moved to South Dakota, you would not automatically become a resident because you have already established residency in Iowa. We would treat them as a non-resident. This would change that up to the age of 24, and it lines up with what is required on the federal FAFSA form. So, after the age of 24, you are considered independent from your parents, according to the federal government, and we would like to line those two up. The third thing that it does is students who marry South Dakota residents would automatically become a resident. You would think that would be kind of a no-brainer, but actually the law is quite specific, and there are a number of criteria that you must look at when you determine whether somebody becomes a South Dakota resident or not. And if they came to South Dakota to attend school full time, that has to be weighed to say, well, were they really here to get married or were they really here to attend school? And believe it or not, the people who have to interpret this law want to make sure that they're following the intent of the law, and they feel that in the cases where somebody marries a South Dakota resident, the right thing to do is to give them residency. So those are the three things that this bill would change in the current residency statutes. We had a full committee of all of the universities look at the current residency policies, and these were the three things that they found that were the most egregious or unfair, or that usually students were appealing, saying, this just isn't right to me, and we tend to agree with that. We worked with the financial aid folks, we worked with the admissions folks, and these were the three areas that they would like to see changed. Why are we making these recommendations? Well, I think it's a fairness issue. We believe when these situations come before us and they appeal them, technically we don't like them to have to appeal because that's a pretty long process. There's two different levels of appeal, and when we look at those, we have to look at the entire law. And when most of these people in these situations think, well, this is a no-brainer, my parents live here, why am I not a resident? They don't quite understand when they don't get residency. We just think it's a fairness issue. Students that live with their parents, tend to live with their parents longer these days. We see more students following their parents, even though they're attending school full-time in another state. If their parents move to South Dakota, they tend to follow. And we see that just a change in current society. And so we would like to see the law reflect that and say when they move with their parents, they will also become a resident of South Dakota if their parents move here. And finally, when a non-resident student marries a South Dakota resident, it's really difficult to give them residency status under this current law. But it's just the right thing to do. We've had the question come up several times already, well, what is the fiscal impact of making these changes? That's a very hard thing to determine because there's no way to track these students other than through the ones that actually do a formal appeal to us. So we looked at the number of appeals we get and then tried to extrapolate that and say, well, how many students aren't doing appeals? We think that the changes in this law would affect about 50 students per year out of the 32,000 students or so that we're currently enrolling. So not a big number, but for those 50 students, these changes are very important. If we were to give residency status to 50 more students that are coming to us, we would lose about $95,000 a year. But we also believe we would actually gain some students from these changes because the student, and I'll use my Iowa example again, the students who is attending full-time in Iowa but parents move to South Dakota, they may make a decision whether or not they'll follow their parent, whether or not they're going to get residency rates or non-resident rates or non-resident rates. So we believe some of those kids would actually come here, and we want them to come here. So in that case, we believe we'd gain about 10 students. And again, these are really just guesstimates at this point because it's hard to track, it's hard to know. And because they would come here, pay full tuition and fees, we would offset 95 of that thousand by about $75,000. And we would lose probably about $20,000 on our best guess by making these changes. We believe $20,000 is still the right thing to do, and we would ask for your approval of this bill. Be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Kramer. We'll take questions after we take further testimony.
Yep.
Thank you. I also apologize, Mr. Kramer, if you see me not looking. I'm paying attention, but I'm trying to figure out this flipping iPad. So it may take me some time, and I apologize to all of you in advance if that's the case. Whoever else has iPads, they may not be looking at you, but we're certainly paying attention. Any other proponent testimony on House Bill 1012? Proponent testimony. Seeing none, opponent testimony on House Bill 1012. Any opponent testimony? Again, I'd remind people to sign the podium in the back if they intend to testify. Seeing no opponent testimony, we will now open it up to questions or comments by members of the committee. Any questions by members of the committee? Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. Mr. Kramer, could you come up for a second? In reading this bill, I don't have any trouble with the increase in the age from 21 to 24 or allowing a spouse to become a resident. I think that's common sense. But what did enter my head, and I have a question on, students that are living in adjoining states close to the borders, Would it be possible under this that they could go to a high school in South Dakota their last semester and qualify as a resident and graduate from that high school in South Dakota? And to follow up that a little bit, would it be possible for a student in New York to come out and live with his grandparents the last semester, graduate from a South Dakota high school, and qualify for a residency?
Mr. Chairman, I would say the answer to those questions is yes. If a student, according to the change that we're making here today, graduated from a South Dakota high school, they would be eligible for residency forever with this change. Today, they could do that and become a resident, and it would be last for 7 years. So I think the only change here is, in your example, is we would be extending that period of time. If somebody really wanted to come here from New York, graduate from South Dakota High School, they would still be eligible today up to 7 years. We would be extending that. We don't see that kind of thing happening. That, I mean, it's hard to follow, but we don't see that kind of thing happening, but probably more likely in your first example of the border states. Mm-hmm. In border states is always a bit of an issue because there are parents who live in South Dakota and actually send their kids across the border because it's more convenient. In this case, we focused on the high school graduates because we felt that those are the people who we want to attract. They have ties to the state, and it seemed to fit very well with a number of programs in the state trying to attract people back. But you're absolutely right. That could happen.
Thank you.
Follow up? Any further follow-up? Further questions by members of the committee? Representative Cronin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Other states that are kind of doing this type of thing, I mean, are we setting ourselves up, not setting ourselves up, are we going to be able to have an advantage over our neighboring states because of this bill, or do they already have the same type of language?
Mr. Chairman, we looked at the surrounding states' policies on residency classification because we thought ours was actually too restrictive. In fact, it's very similar to what other states are doing. These particular issues, we don't know how they handle them. We did not specifically ask, but when we looked at their laws, they look at very similar criteria that that are in our statutes as to how you determine whether somebody's become a resident or not. And so we think these are just cleanups that make it easier for the people who have to make this designation at the time of admittance. And it for those students who you would deny residency to, who just married a South Dakota resident, they really have a tough time with that, and we understand that. And so we really just want to make the process a little bit easier and very clear in that you're not violating the law. If they've married a South Dakota resident, you give them residency, no matter what the other circumstances. So we think we're in line with the other states. We do have states around us who are, in fact, ignoring their entire residency laws. And we have a number of institutions, because they want their enrollments up, they give everybody residency. I'm not sure how they do that under their own laws, but we see that happening more and more because there's such a competition out there right now for students, especially in the Midwest with the declining demographics. But we believe this is still puts us in a good position.
Further questions by members of the committee? Representative Munsterman.
This is a little bit of an offshoot of Representative Wink's question. Do you have any idea or in your database or any sense, and I'm guessing you don't, but as far as those students that are out of state coming to South Dakota University that have grandparents that live in the state. And how I want you to think about this actually is a little different than what the representative was talking about, that if we looked at it as an attraction tool where we did allow resident tuition to all grandchildren that live out of state as long as their grandparents live in state, that might play into us attracting a younger workforce.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any data on that. We look at a number of ways to attract non-resident students. That's not one that's come up. We've talked about children of alumni. That was a very popular program until it was eliminated when these statutes changed. We haven't reinstituted it because we don't, again, it's very hard to identify those students because we no longer track whether you're a child of alum or not, but we are looking at that particular program. We've never looked at grandparents. but we're always looking for ways to attract people back to this state, and it's certainly something that we could try to take a look at because we believe it does fit well with the state's initiative to grow our younger population and bring them back. And so that's part of what's going on here, is when parents move here, we want to make sure we treat their children appropriately and treat them as residents. So it's in that same spirit, and we could take a look at it.
Further questions by members of the committee? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you had mentioned the students who maybe attend a Minnesota high school because it's more convenient for their parents to send them to Minnesota, but they live in South Dakota. They live just right on the border. If we strike the language that we are in Section 1 of this bill, are they no longer considered a resident in order to attend a South Dakota college and gain residency status?
That's correct. They would have to graduate from a South Dakota high school. Because they've graduated from a South Dakota high school, they would have residency in Minnesota. You can't have residency in two places. And so you could for tuition purposes, but legally you've established a residence in South Dakota and Minnesota because their law is very similar to this. So if they graduated from high school in Minnesota, they would be treated as a resident there. So we would treat them as a non-resident for tuition purposes. But you are correct. They would not be, get residency status under this change.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So under existing law, though, with the law that we have aside from this bill, you're saying that right now, that student who lives in South Dakota but graduates from a Minnesota high school would be considered a resident as of today. However, with this legislation, if we passed it, they would no longer be considered a resident, although they live in South Dakota.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And following up on that, Mr. Kramer, how does reciprocity then work into it? Does that level the playing field as far as the tuition costs in a circumstance like that?
The reciprocity rates are almost identical to our non-resident rates. The resident tuition that a Minnesota student would pay is about 150% of our resident rate, and that's what we offer to all non-residents. So it really does not level the playing field between resident and non-resident.
Further questions? Seeing none, we'll close. Thank you, Mr. Kramer. We'll close the public testimony portion, and now we'll open up for action by members of the committee. Any action by members of the committee? Representative Munsterman.
I would move a due pass.
Second.
Motion is by Representative Munsterman, due pass. Second by Representative Gibson's comments on that motion, Representative Munsterman.
Yeah, excuse me. I know that there's a lot of ways that we could look at this, and I guess the lens that I'm looking at it through is really looking at a policy change that will help us attract younger people. Some of the demographics that we'll lay out across the state over the next 20 to 30 years will show that our workforce, we're going to be in a great workforce need of between 30 to 40,000 people between the ages of 25 and 55. I mean, that's a given by 2030, 2035. And so things like this and any other innovative ways that we can use our universities to try to attract young people in, we currently, if I remember right, and I should have asked this question, for out-of-state students going to school in our state, we're retaining, I believe, at 30% rate. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's another tool that we can use to try to, even if they do come over their last semester of high school, you know, that may give us a little heartburn, but if we can attract them, keep them in our state, they're going to be in our state and be a productive citizen. And so I look at it as a return on investment of what, you know, would be really maybe a minimal investment on our part. So that's where I'm at on that.
Very good. Further comments on the motion do pass? Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. Well, I disagree, I guess, with some parts of this. I do think that there is a possibility of abuse, but I think it's probably so small that I'm not going to worry too much about it. I think there's probably the remaining parts of the bill are probably make it worthwhile. So I'm going to vote for it, and I think that if it becomes abusive, I think we can address it later.
Further comments? Seeing none. Seeing one, Representative Cronin.
I'd like to make an amendment.
Substitute motion,
make an amendment, sorry.
State your motion.
I'd like to
strike lines, the remove the strikes from lines 8 through 11.
Is there a second for that?
Second.
On the first page.
On page 1, say your motion again.
Just completely strike lines 8 through 11. Just completely strike lines 8 through 11.
Okay, there's a substitute motion to amend by Representative Cronin, second by Representative Gosch. Comments on that motion, Representative Cronin?
Well, I think Representative Hansen brought up a point of having, you know, families who have kids in South Dakota, and the closest school or the it's easiest for them to go to school in Minnesota, yet we make them... Right now, they're allowed to go to school in South Dakota, where their families are, where they work, where they live, and here we're telling them that they're going to be non-residents. And I think this is something that we allow right now, and this is one part where we want to bring more students to South Dakota, and this is a way to actually take some out. So I think this is something that I think I could surely live with, and makes the bill a little bit better.
Further comments, Representative Gosch?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think Representative Cronin said it very well, and I would agree with him. And if the purpose is to have more people eligible for in-state tuition, we certainly would not want to deny it to people who actually reside in South Dakota, in my opinion. So I would urge supporting the substitute motion.
I'm going to step out of order a little bit. I'd like to get Mr. Kramer's comments on that proposed motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We would see the inclusion of lines 8 and 9 as being a friendly amendment. We would not be opposed to that. I'm not sure that we would want to take the overstrikes off of 10 and 11, because what that would say then is if the student graduated from high school and their parents moved away, if you leave that language in there, they would not be eligible, because their parents would still have to live there, and that was not our intent. Our intent was, if you graduated from our high school, no matter what your parents did later on, you could come back to the state. So leaving lines 8 and 9 in there, we would not be opposed to that. We were a bit concerned that there might be a reaction the other way, that if we left those in there, for students who graduate from other states' high schools, even though their parents live here, we would not have a problem with leaving that in. I would not leave in 10 and 11 for the reason I stated.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer. I suspect we have a clarification on the amendments. Representative Cronin.
Can I withdraw the previous amendment?
You may.
All right. Thank you.
Restate your... Do you have another motion?
I do have another
substitute motion.
Just to strike lines 8 and 9. Thank you.
All right. The substitute of the substitute, if that's even permitted, is restate that again. On page 1, strike...
Page 1, strike line 8 and 9.
Remove the strike-through.
Of
8 and 9. So the strike-through would remain for lines 10, 11, 12, and 13. Is that accurate, Representative Cronin?
Yes.
Okay. Everyone clear on where we are? So the motion before us is to remove the strike-through on lines 8 and 9 on page 1.
Second.
Representative Gibson offered her second. So that is the motion before us. All those in favor, is a voice vote. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. I'm sorry. Those opposed, aye.
Aye.
Those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. All right, that motion passes. It's early in session, a little rusty here. All right, so do I have another motion? Representative Gosch.
I would move do pass as amended.
The motion is do pass as amended by Representative Gosch, second by Representative Vercio. Any comments on that motion, Representative Gosch?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just briefly, I think Mr. Kramer laid it out, and I think with the change we made, I really believe it makes the proposal even better and comports with the purpose for which he stated the bill was brought. So I would urge your support of the bill as amended.
Further comments on the motion to amend? Seeing none, the motion before us is do pass as amended. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Consett. Gibson.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Killer. Munsterman.
Aye.
Nostrup.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Virtue.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 11 ayes, 2 excused.
Thank you. House Bill 1012 passes as amended. Next, we will move on to House Bill 1030. We are going to defer. We will not be taking that up at this time. We will move then to House Bill 1036, an act to prohibit retention of certain administration costs for untimely 911 surcharge remittances. House Bill 1036, proponent testimony, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jenna Howell. I am the Director of Legal and Regulatory Services for the South Dakota Department of Public Safety. We are administratively attached to the State 911 Coordination Board, and that is, it's green. I apologize. Is that better? And we are bringing this bill. It is just a slight addition to what was enacted last year under Senate Bill 174 involving NextGen 911. In discussing the actual implementation of all of those parts of the code with the Department of Revenue, the issue came up that under the code as it is currently enacted, all retailers and providers of 911 services are allowed to retain an administration cost of 2% or $25, whichever is greater. However, there's no differentiation right now between people who timely remit and file and those who don't. So this is just a correction which states that if you do not timely file or remit your 911 surcharges as required elsewhere, you are not allowed to retain that administrative cost. That's very simply just a cleanup. In speaking with the Department of Revenue this week, their current numbers show that there are 126 returns that have either been filed late or are currently delinquent, and we just want to clarify that those who do not remit the surcharge, as I said, is already required by law, they cannot then retain that benefit, and we think that's fair to give the advantage to those who do follow the law and not allow an advantage to those who don't. In speaking with a couple members, I just wanted to add that I was not aware previously of any opposition. I do believe there is going to be one statement, at least, of opposition so far today. I just wanted to clarify that. With that, I'll stand by for any questions. Great.
Thank you, Ms. Howell.
Mr. Chair.
Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1036. Proponent testimony. Seeing none, opponent testimony on House Bill 1036. Opponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Oops, sorry about that. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sean Lyons, South Dakota Retailers Association. Good to see all of you back here again. I'll be brief. This is kind of one of those awkward opposition moments, but I thought at least it was important to be on the record with it. As I look around the dais up here this morning, many of you were on the legislation last year, and it was kind of the great compromise, if you will, between telecom providers and state and local government officials, and obviously those of us in the retail community. And it was a lengthy process and one in which everybody communicated throughout. So we find ourselves a little bit in a strange position this year that just this week we found out about this proposal. When the legislation passed last year, our organization worked with the Department of Revenue. We held a series of webinars. We put information in our newsletter, which all of you receive. We have a circulation of about 5,000, including our 3,800 members. We sent out information to our members about registering for the new 911 system and what retailers who sell this product need to know in terms of filing and remitting that information back to the state. So it's news to me, in fact, it's news to me this morning that I learned that there's 126 retailers that may be delinquent in remitting this fee back to the state. And I would say if they're delinquent, then obviously they shouldn't be able to collect that administrative fee. That being said, there is every opportunity under the sun that the folks that brought this legislation today could have come to us throughout this year and the folks from the Department of Revenue and saying, we need to get information back out. In fact, we haven't heard anything. We thought all was going well. So I'm a little surprised that we have this bill, and it may be just that. It may be just cleanup legislation. But it seems as we went through that huge process last year of communicating that the folks in the state wouldn't have contacted us a little bit sooner. The other thing that I would call your attention to in this legislation, I had a chance to visit with you, a few of you folks, but I didn't go to the full committee because I don't know how big of an issue it is, other than maybe we're just kicking the can a little bit. But if you look at the bill in line 10, and we talk about, line 11, timely remit the surcharge by electronic means in a timely fashion. I'm confused, and maybe those of you that are lawyers in the committee can help me understand. Timely, give me the definition of what is timely. Is that past midnight? Is that a day late? Is that a week late? I don't know what that definition means. And so if we really are doing cleanup legislation here, then I think we at least need to say, we're told all the time, when we submit our forms, our tax returns back to the state, we know, we're told what's timely. I don't see that defined here. So maybe this bill is just a little bit premature before its time. Maybe this should have been brought last year in the Great Compromise. I'm just confused why we're seeing it this morning and the manner in which it was communicated to the folks that are involved with it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Further opponent testimony, House Bill 1036. Seeing none, Ms. Howell, if you want to have a brief rebuttal, that will be permitted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to briefly respond to the question about the definition of timely, in the bill it specifically says, in accordance with sections 3445.8.2 and 3445.8.3, timely file. I apologize, you do not have copies of those with me right here. I was trying to pull them up. But those do define the timelines and the requirements for filing, and those would provide the definition of a timely filing.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Howell. With that, we will close the public testimony portion of the committee hearing and open it up for comments or questions by members of the committee. Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. I think Mr. Lyons, I guess, brought up the question I would have had as timely, it being vague. But if it is addressed in other statutes and so on, I guess that satisfies my curiosity.
Further comments or questions? Representative Cronin.
Thank you for Ms. Howell. I guess to the line 11, timely remit. Does that go when a retailer takes the surcharge and remits the surcharge? Does that go on with the tax return itself, the sales tax return, or does that go in a separate envelope, so to speak? Because it goes to a different fund, so does it go back to the Department of Revenue with a sales tax return, or does it go back on a separate envelope?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cronin, if I understand your question correctly, the amounts are, the returns are filed with the Department of Revenue. The surcharges come to the Department of Public Safety, and then we remit them. So I believe it happens at the same time, but I'm not positive how revenue
follows
there.
Follow up then, because I think that's the question here, is the statutes 34, 45, 8.2 and 8.3 deal with timely filing the sales tax return,
yes,
correct?
Sir. Yes, sir.
And then timely remitting the surcharge due to the Department of Public Safety, I don't know where that is defined. That's in 8.3? Okay. And that is all electronic? That's all electronically then? So it doesn't go with the sales tax return?
You know what? May I defer the question? The state 911 coordinator is here and could probably answer that question more specifically than I could. My understanding is that it can be done either paper file or electronically, but I can get confirmation of that if that would be acceptable with the
chair. Very good. Yes, always good to have a wing woman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Shawnee Rechtenbaugh. I'm the state 911 coordinator for the Department of Public Safety. The filing is electronic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Just one, does that satisfy your question, Representative Cronin? Representative Gosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, I guess you could probably answer this too. Would it be the intention of the department to disallow the deduction if the filing or the remittance isn't timely just for that month or forever?
Just for that month.
Okay, thank you.
Once they get on track and they're filing timely, they can keep that administrative fee.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Further questions by members of the committee? Thank you. Seeing no further questions, I would open up to committee action. Is there any committee action to be taken on House Bill 1036? Representative Nostrup.
Move due pass.
Motion by Representative Nostrup is due pass.
Second.
Second by Representative Munsterman. Discussion on that motion. Representative Nostrup.
Thank you. I think it was covered. So.
Thank you. Further comments on the motion due pass? Seeing none, the motion before us is due pass on House Bill 1036. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed nay. Clerk will call the roll.
Consett. Gibson.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Killer. Munsterman.
Aye.
Nostrup.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Virtue.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 11 ayes, 2 excused.
House Bill 1036 passes unanimously. Easy sledding so far here in state affairs. It'll be a piece of cake this year. Let's move on to House Bill 1063. Proponent testimony on House Bill 1063.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Edmond with the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications. And I'm here to promote easier sledding here to finish the morning off. We have a bill in front of you in regards to cleaning up some what we consider to be some ancient statutes within the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications. This is at the governor's request, his red tape committee, in order to try and clean up some of things within statutes that may not be as pertinent as they were at one point in time. We have three statutes that we are looking to eliminate. The first one has to do with creating a five-year action plan. Originally, this was in the early 90s, I believe this was put in place for something that was called the Rural Development Telecommunications Network. This is the precursor to our two-way video and audio network that's in place today called the Digital Dakota Network. At that point in time, the RDTN was governed by a board. That's no longer the case. It is within the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications. This particular statute is asking us to put a five-year plan together and then submit it to ourselves for approval. We find that to be somewhat unnecessary. The second one authorizes BIT to enter, limits BIT into entering into contracts for no more than 5 years. Though from a technology basis, we rarely exceed 5 years with our contracts anyway because of the changing nature of our business. We would prefer to make those decisions based on the business aspects of whatever the agreement may be is our approach. The last one, 13356, authorizes BIT to enter into an agreement for a central processing unit. This has to go back nearly to the days of a dinosaur, when a central processing unit was within the mainframe computer, and that was our only type of computer. Today, you can't buy nearly any electronic device with it having a CPU in it. Whether it's a mainframe computer, a PC, a tablet, a smartphone, whatever it may be. So this one, in addition to the fact that in an equipment reserve replacement account is specified in there, that is not in use today. I'm not sure where that exists. If it does exist and it does have funding in it, I would love to know where it is. Additionally, the purchase of our mainframe computers are covered under a federal guideline called A87. It's a very stringent accounting guideline in regards to cost recovery, and hence our purchasing of mainframe computers these days is really within our rates, and as we recover the cost of those rates from our clients, that's how it is allocated. So, again, summary, a cleanup bill. We would certainly appreciate your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edmund. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1063. Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony to 1063? Opponent testimony. Seeing none, we'll open up for questions, comments, or action by members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to pass.
Motion on the table is do pass. Motion on the table is do pass. I've had competing seconds. We'll go with Representative Parsley. Congratulations, Representative Parsley, on your first second in state affairs. It's a proud day. All right. comments on that motion, Representative Gibson.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I just have one comment as I listened to the sterling testimony by Mr. Edmund. I recalled that his face looked vaguely familiar. And I just want to remind those listening and those here that the House did win the Senate House basketball game last year, and Mr. Edmund, you're free to join winners anytime you so choose. So if you're looking for a team, if you're a free agent this year, come see me after the committee. All right, the motion before us is do pass on House Bill 1063. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Consett, Gibson,
aye.
Gosch,
aye.
Hansen,
aye.
Hunhoff,
aye.
Killer, Munsterman,
aye.
Nostrup,
aye.
Parsley,
aye.
Virtue,
aye.
Wink,
aye.
Cronin,
aye.
Lust,
aye.
Mr. Sayre, 11 ayes, 2 excused.
House Bill 1063 passes unanimously. It'll be a first in state affairs history. A kumbaya mode buzz of the session continues. I will object to consent. We don't want to send that message to the world, but we do that now with state affairs. So with that, we've come to the conclusion of our calendar. We will start Wednesday at our normal time, 7:45, and take on some bills, and I would appreciate a little more timely attendance by some. So with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right, moved by Munsterman, second by Wink. All in favor say aye. Opposed nay. We are adjourned.